Okay, Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. These three are found up together in Numbers 16, verse 1. Find that Korah was a descendant of Levi, Dathan and Abiram, descendants of Reuben. Now we know Reuben from a previous study. Reuben was the firstborn son of Jacob. But he was also the one that defiled his father's bed with Bilhah. Now Levi was one of two sons that deceived the men of Shechem, slew the men, plundered the city, took their wives, their children, all their livestock. So we see the ancestry of these men, and perhaps that has some bearing on their actions as well. Now, Dathan's name means well or fountain. Abiram, his name means proud. Korah is a little different. Korah is defined as baldness, but also as icy or frost. He's a very cold person. Cold person is described as a person with a cold personality, either represses their feelings or doesn't feel them strongly. Those with the former likely are very troubled, who deal with emotional hardships, being tough, or some similar defensive mechanism. A cold person tends to be incredibly self-centered. Their behavior manifests in playing the victim or trying to one-up somebody else. One last thing about a cold person. They will often try to control the people around them through manipulation. Anyway, they often voice assumptions about intentions or beliefs, and they react to them as if they were true in order to justify their feelings or their own actions, all the while defying what others say in conversation. So we read, Korah said, "Ye have gone too far, Moses. Why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly?" Korah, a cold and calculating man, set himself up for a fatal mistake, for it seems that he was the one who had gone too far. So in Numbers 14, we read that the Amalekites and the Canaanites were facing the children of Israel. We read in verse 45, "Then the Canaanites, the Amalekites and the Canaanites who lived in the hill country came down and defeated them," that is the Israelites, "and pursued them even to Hormah." So this results, there was much complaining and bitterness. And there were always agitators ready to stir up trouble and revolt. So on this occasion was Korah, a prince of the tribe of Levi. He saw in a general disappointment an opportunity to seize the priesthood from Aaron. He was sure that the failure of Israel lay in the leadership of Moses and Aaron, and believed that he could do better himself. Korah was a leader among the Levites. He was a first cousin to Moses and Aaron. And according to Josephus, the Jewish historian, Korah was very wealthy and the most eloquent public speaker. He envied Moses and Aaron because of the position that they held and planned to wrest the power from them. Moreover, he readily received support from a number of other Levites. In addition, he sought the help of others outside his own tribe. He received it from disgruntled members of the tribe of Reuben. Reuben was the firstborn of the sons of Jacob, and because of that, the tribe normally should have been granted the preeminence over the other tribes. But because of Reuben's shocking sin, that position had been given to Judah. This caused jealousy among the leaders of the Reubenites. So when Korah found among their number some willing to join him in his plot, he promised that if the revolt succeeded, whilst he and other Levites would have the priesthood, the princes of Reuben would give him the civil control of the nation. With that in mind, Dathan and Abiram and On, princes of the tribe of Reuben, joined the conspiracy. On was also mentioned in verse 1 of number 16, but it doesn't appear elsewhere. So their tents were close to those of Korah. For the tents of the Korathites were set up on the side of the tabernacle where those of the tribe of Reuben were also placed. No less than 250 Levitical princes, men of high repute in Israel, joined Korah's revolt. They too blamed Moses and Aaron for the failure of the nation to reach the promised land. The more they discussed this among themselves, the more certain they became that they were right on the side of Korah, and soon found himself as head of a numerous following. Now, it's interesting to note that why 250? In a Mandarin slang term, 250 is an insult. It means stupid person or a simpleton. So perhaps that applies to the 250. So the time was ripe. Placing himself the head of the Levites supporting him, he approached Moses and Aaron, accusing them of taking to themselves positions that God had never granted them. "You take too much upon yourselves," he boldly claimed. "All the congregation is holy. Why then do you lift up yourselves above the rest of us?" These words of rebellion filled Moses with concern. He feared lest God should destroy the whole of the rebellious congregation. An unreasonable opposition tired him and made him despondent. The continual heavy work of caring for such an ungrateful and complaining people seemed beyond his ability to cope. He was over 80 years old. We know how that is. And he had never aspired to leadership, but had been appointed by Yahweh to that position. He was not an eloquent speaker like Korah. And he was not prepared to stoop to flattery in order to win the support of weak, mortal men such as Korah had done. But there was one to whom he could turn with full assurance that he would help. Therefore, upon answering Korah, he quietly turned to God in prayer and thus strengthenedly replied, "Tomorrow, Yahweh will show who are his and whom he has selected to come near unto him as his priest. You, Korah, and all your 250 Levites with you, come tomorrow before the tabernacle with censers in your hands, light incense before Yahweh. We shall then see whom he has chosen to be prince and priest in Israel." This was a challenge indeed. God had commanded that Aaron and his sons should offer incense, and that had warned that death would be the penalty of others attempting to do the same. Korah and his company should have known that, for they had seen what happened to Nadab and Abihu when they had dared to come before Yahweh with strange fire. On that occasion, fire from Yahweh had leaped out and consumed those wicked men. But Korah, with his men with him now, believed that God was on their side. And so they willingly accepted the challenge that Moses put to them. Moses warned them of the consequences. "Ye are despising the work that God has given you to do as assistants to the priests." That was what he told Korah and his company. "In so doing, you are not arguing with Moses, but with Yahweh." He next sent Dathan and Abiram and commanded them to come up, but they refused to do so. They had rejected Moses as their leader. They accused him of failing in his mission and of bringing disaster upon the nation. "You've not only failed to bring us up into the land that flows with milk and honey, so that we may die in the wilderness, but you also want to be prince over us. We will not come up." This answer angered Moses. He pleaded with Yahweh to reject their offering and their position. Then turning unto them, he prepared for the contest on the morrow. By then all Israel was in a state of excitement. Most of the people sided with Korah, for they too felt that Moses had failed, and nor did they like the idea of wandering aimlessly in the wilderness until death overtook them. Therefore, on the following day, when Korah and the 250 Levites assembled at the tabernacle, representatives of all the tribes were there to view the proceedings. They saw on one side Korah at the head of 250 Levites, men of renown, and on the other side the lonely figures of Moses and Aaron. Each of the rebellious Levites held in his hand a censer burning with incense. It filled the air with fragrance. It was an exciting moment. Then suddenly, a hush fell over the huge congregation of people, for they saw the glory of Yahweh suddenly shine out from the front of the tabernacle. The excitement became more intense. The shining forth of the divine glory made one and all in their great assembly to recognize the crisis was worthy of God's attention. The rebels, of course, were confident. Confident that right was with them. And they waited in the hope that God would reveal himself to be on their side. The people of Israel sympathized with them, rather than with Moses and Aaron, who were thus isolated from the rest. Then suddenly the voice of the God of Israel speaking unto Moses and Aaron, saying unto them, separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. As these dread words were heard, fear took hold of the people. They knew full well that the anger of Yahweh meant that was directed towards them. Who could save them? Who could save them? They had turned on Moses and rejected his leadership. But that faithful man of God had not. He had not deserted them. Once again, he stood in the breach. He did not want everyone to die on his account. His great objective in life was the salvation of his people. He would overlook their murmurings and anger against him. He would even sympathize with their disappointment through being denied the promised land. He did not want them to be destroyed, but rather changed in heart and mind. With his brother Aaron, he fell down before Yahweh, pleading that all Israel should not be punished because of the wickedness of a few. Once again, God accepted the prayer of Moses, and the people were saved. But those who had plotted against Moses led the revolt that they had to be punished. To ignore their actions would mean that God would be defied without danger. Moses commanded Israel, depart from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and touch nothing of them, lest ye be consumed with them. The people who had been only too happy to support these men in their plot now just as quickly withdrew from them. They were left standing in the opening of their tents in little groups of their own. Moses addressed all the people as they fearfully watched to see what would happen. By this ye shall know that Yahweh has sent me to do all these works, and that I have not done them of my own mind, he said. If these men die a common death, then Yahweh hath not sent me. But if a new thing happen, and the earth open her mouth and swallow them up with all that are with them, then you will know that these men have sinned against Yahweh. No sooner had he finished speaking than the earth began to shake, and to the horror of the people, as they gazed spellbound, the ground opened, forming a frightening pit, swallowing up the three foolish princes. With a cry of horror, the terror-struck people rushed away from that spot, lest they also would perish. Meanwhile, the 250 Levites who had not assembled in the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, but had remained in the tabernacle with their senses, smoking with incense, suffered for their folly. A fierce flame of fire flared out from before Yahweh and consumed them, leaving charred bodies and brass of censers on the ground. Yahweh commanded Moses to gather up the brass and with it make a covering for the altar of burnt offerings, that it might be a memorial unto the children of Israel, teaching them to treat the things of God with greater reverence. Only the priests whom he appointed were permitted to come near him to offer incense.